Where do we start from?
World with joy. World with joy. Hoping to fill a fair new world with joy.
Okay. So this is the beginning of the breaking out of a new force, a new manifestation of energy in the world of matter, which is life. Sri Aurobindo uses, as he has mentioned in some of his letters, of the aspects of architecture. Just like in a building, there is a base, there is a ground floor. The ground floor is matter. On the foundation of the ground floor is built the world of life. It stands on the basis of matter. On the basis of life, out of the world of life, emerges a new principle of light. Some light, not the entire light and manifestation, but light. So you call it mind. And that is how he describes Ashwapati as a crown of the architecture of the worlds. That is, world after world after world, he arrives at the peak, the summit, beyond the mind, in the world where there is no half light, but a complete embodiment of light. And this is the whole progressive manifestation of light out of darkness. Life is a stage, a very powerful stage, because it is leading to the manifestation of energy. Without energy, there can be no activity, no growth, no change. So life comes out of the world of matter. But this energy has not yet been channelized by consciousness. So it can become a little lost. It can move in one direction or in another. That is the whole problem. There is the whole sense of moving away from the light also. In our life, we have a play of the manifestation of darkness. If there is too much energy, unless there is consciousness, unless the control of consciousness is there. So that's that little poem of Sri Aurobindo's life. Mystic miracle, daughter of delight, because it's a projection of the creative energy. Life, thou ecstasy, let the radius of thy flight be eternity. Whereas our radius is time. It is not eternity. There is a limit. There's something that holds us back to manifest completely the possibilities that are hidden in the world of life. Yet, the last stanza is so beautiful, where the author, of course, says, even in rags, I am a god. Fallen, I am divine. High I triumph, when downtrod, long I live, when slain. So this play of opposition to life is not an opposition. It is actually the starting point of a new victory. Each difficulty, each opposition is the starting point of a battle. And it leads to victory if there is a conscious aspiration. And this is, he's describing himself actually, he's describing Ashwapati also. That though man is in rags, looks like a beggar, he is weak, poor, miserable, he is divine, whatever may happen. So this is now the fall of life, this last part of the canto, here too the gracious great winged angel, the creative force, poured her splendor and her swiftness and her bliss, her power, her joy, her beauty, hoping to fill a fair new world with joy. This is the new stage. Just like when we try out something new, in the beginning there is a joyous enthusiasm. We are going to do something that never done before. So it is very, very, there is a thrill, there is an enthusiasm. When it persists after a while, we can't hold on to that enthusiasm. It flags, it decreases, it is not the same. But this is the whole secret of existence, to hold on to that enthusiasm, which is one of the first aspects in the synthesis. You have the four aids, isn't it? He speaks of the four aids. And the fourth is enthusiasm. Utsaha, enthusiasmos, as the Greeks call it. A sense of something that lifts us from our everyday ordinary state to something not yet experienced, but which alone can lead us to the next level. So as comes a goddess to a mortal's breast and fills his days with her celestial clasp, she stooped to make her home in transient shapes. We get the secret of the whole interplay. Like you have this, we want to read these epics like Ilion. The constant connection between earth and sky, between the powers that are above and the powers that are growing on earth. It is through the interconnection that there is a new manifestation, because every epic is an expression of an evolutionary change. It's a new world. It's a new manifestation. The old is replaced by something until then unmanifest, but was always waiting to come out. So this has always been there in every epic. There is a clash between the past and the new stage of manifestation, between man from below and the intervention of powers that are cosmic, that are universal, these forces. So here also he speaks of the great winged angel. She comes down into our world. She's always coming down. Mother has come down. How much can we absorb, assimilate that grace? If we assimilate or take in something of her grace, it is often received by beings like us who are incomplete, imperfect, darkened. So that force becomes reduced, distorted, diminished. The force in itself is divine. All force is divine. At the origin, it is divine. So we have this, as comes a goddess to a mortal's breast and fills his days with her celestial clasp, she stooped to make her home in transient shapes. This is she came down into this world of transience. She the eternal and we the transient. We are not contradictory. We are incomplete. We are, you might say, transitional beings moving from transience to eternity. So we need this power, this guidance. She comes into our home. She accepts us for what we are, exactly like the mother. She doesn't expect us to be perfect to start with. We are far from that. She takes us for what we are and then leads us forward from where we are to the next forward step. The Supreme Lord, the consciousness, is above, beyond, perfect. She is the active force. This is the force of evolution, of prakriti, of change. Life is part of that. Therefore, in matter's womb, she casts the immortal's fire. That is why we, made of matter, can have the aspiration for the divine, because she has put that fire. It is always Agni. You know, the Vedic mantras start with invocation to Agni. Agni is what? It is lit on the ground. It climbs from below up. It is not above, it is below. From below we go up. That fire, the possibility of the fire, is in matter. Therefore, matter is not inert. There is no fundamental inertia. The possibility of life, of light, of truth, is hidden in what seems to be the opposite. So the fire is not only life energy, fire is light, fire is illumination, fire is purification, fire is aspiration. Fire really destroys whatever stands as opposition to the divine. So in the unfeeling vast, woke thought and hope, this is the involution of the divine. So that from below, the rising up of thought, of hope, of the stages of matter and life and mind, and hope. Hope is not of the mind. Hope is an inherent knowledge, aspiration for something that is not yet. Yet we know somehow, someday, we can arrive at it, because that promise is there. The Divine has made us this promise, I will always be with you. If we can hold on to that connection, we can move towards that which is not yet and realize the perfection that has not yet expressed itself. Smote with her charm and beauty, flesh and nerve. Flesh and nerve is matter. And yet there is a thrill in the body. The body does not only breathe. The body does not only, is not a form or a shape. The body has the capacity to respond to the immaterial. It responds to beauty, which is not simply form, is a principle of a divine presence in the form. That is what Mother describes beauty as. It's the principle of perfection in the physical. When I can somewhere catch that, even a glimpse of that perfection, in any form, anything, because my senses, the body has senses, and the senses connect with the world around itself. But there are other senses. There are the physical senses. There are the emotional, vital senses. There are mental senses. Because we have so many bodies. We don't only have a physical body. We have layers of existence. One envelope followed by another and a third. These are like sheets, they are called koshas in Sanskrit. So there is a sense of the delight of existence. What is life if there is no delight? Is it really just to breathe, to sleep, to eat? Is that living? But it doesn't make sense. Unless I can sense something that there is a magic in this world, in this world of form. And that magic is hidden by life. If I'm alive to these things, we have to be alive to everything. We are not dormant. There's so many of us are just dormant. We just are. But to be able to respond is the secret of existence. To feel. And forced delight on earth's insensible frame. So what did earth do? She created beauty. The life on earth in the world of matter created beauty. That means life was hidden in the soil and now it bursts out in form. Afterwards, life will not only manifest form, it will manifest light, because mind is hidden in life. Later still, truth, the total truth is hidden in the mind. Mind has half-truths. It has glimpses of light. It doesn't possess the total light. So there's this progressive climbing up and ascension. Sri Aurobindo has written about Savitri that he has used this poem as a means of ascension. He is going. As he climbs, the perception of reality becomes more vast, more complete. So Ashwapati is Sri Aurobindo. Ashwapati is climbing from the world of matter, the subtle matter, life, and then he will go on till in book 12, book 11 actually, where he enters into the supramental day. That is the entire yoga of Sri Aurobindo. Alive and clad with trees and herbs and flowers, earth's great brown body smiled towards the skies. You see, such a beautiful thing. Just trees. There is such a power in the trees. As Mother has often told us, if you want to get in touch with the vast, the permanent, the infinite, just sit under a tree or look at the sky or look at the ocean. It expands your consciousness. It removes, quietens the ego, because we are usually concerned with our little personal selves. And that is what stops us from becoming vaster. And these ways of sky and tree and ocean, they just make us feel vaster, part of an enormous plan, the universal nature. And if I can identify myself even for a short while with these things, I break my little ego and are part of something much wider, much vaster. The earth gives us that. She says flowers are very sensitive. She gave so much importance to gardens. One of the reasons. Because there is a certain delight, not just beauty. Beauty goes always hand in hand with joy. Beauty and love and joy, they are the trinity. And that is how Sri Aurobindo describes the significance of the word ananda. Ananda is not just joy. Ananda is beauty, love and joy. So alive and clad with trees and herbs and flowers, earth's great brown body smiled towards the skies. Asia replied to Asia in the sea's laugh. The sky above, the sea below. The response between earth and sky. And this is what we always find. The Uranus and Gaia, as the Greeks said. Or you speak of the world of the eternal above and Prakriti below, the image of Shiva, the supreme consciousness above, and the power of force of love of nature in the form of Shakti, of Prakriti, of Parvati, if you like, the daughter of the mountain, slowly breaking out from the stone and climbing towards the Lord above, touching Him into that conscious manifestation of delight. Until then, he was absorbed in his isolated, absolute stillness. But activity, life, joy is the touch of the connection with the world that evolves from below, the force that evolves from below and rises upwards. So Asia replied to Asia in the sea's laugh. New sentient creatures filled the unseen depths. New manifestations, new beings, gradually they appear on the earth. The whole evolutionary process that he's talking about. Life's glory and swiftness ran in the beauty of beasts. Man dared and thought and met with his soul, the world. The world of form, the world of energy, the world of beauty, and then the world of man. Man contains form. Man has energy. He dares. That man is a man who tries to become more than man, who dares to break out of his boundaries. Others are machines and robots. But if I dare to break out of the limited format of a man, I dare that which is unknown. I dare to attempt, not to achieve right away, but just to attempt that which has never been attempted. That is really the story of Earth's evolution, and there is always a guide. That is the purpose of the avatar. He shows the way. He comes to tell us this is what we are here for. Not to repeat the old cycles again and again, treading the beaten track. What? Is it safe to repeat the whole story again and again? It ends in nothing. I start from nothing and end in nothing. Unless I start from nothing, move towards something. Unattempted, unthought of, undreamt of. And that is the change. Earth is the field of change, is the field of change towards a greater completion, a greater earth, a greater world, a greater life. So man dared, thought. You have to first have a conception, and then you realize this conception. Man dared and thought, and met with his soul, the world. Because the world will resist. Change is not easy. There are resistances. There is only the great who dare, who have courage. It's an expression of the soul. Who have the certitude that there is inside us a power that does not accept to be crushed forever. And that is why, again, you go back to the epics, all ancient stories were about such people. Those who dared to manifest that, attempted that which had not yet been attempted. Every story is based on that. Heroism was the theme. It is symptomatic of that age. This was the age of greatness, the age of heroes, the age of great kings, great warriors, great lovers. And you compare it with the acceptance of today's what you call realism, where you have little men who have little dreams, who repeat the same thing, or who even use now all kinds of artificial methods there is this kind of a moving away from that splendid attempt to break and reach the heights, break out of our limits. But I suppose this is part of the whole process, that there has to be a time where you can't only move forward. You move forward, you come back. And the backward movement is like a springboard towards moving again forward. So today's world, which is not necessarily splendid in all its, where violence and turmoil and all these things and ego, and they seem to have taken hold of life. We learn that this is a stage. You have to know what to dislike, what to give up, so that you can make a choice. So men dared and thought and met with his soul the world. But while the magic breath was on its way, this breath of life, before her gifts could reach our prisoned hearts, a dark, ambiguous presence questioned all. This is just why I spoke about the darkness, the littleness, the lack of aspiration, the lack of faith, which you call being reasonable, being commonsensical. To have common sense and reason, it is a terrible thing. But at a certain stage, Earth has benefited from these things to some extent. You benefit enough before you realize it has lasted long enough, now get out of this stage. Things that have kept us sheltered in littleness, in smallness, after a while you feel I can't breathe. I'm completely as if in a prison, I have to break out. This need, I have to come out of a prison, so first of all I have to be in a prison. Before that I can't break out. So I need the littleness of my mind, my reason, my common sense. That's why it's an ambiguous presence. Ambiguous has a double meaning. What has double meaning? This force, the force of evil, the force of darkness, the force of smallness, the force of ego on the one hand, trying to make us, convince us that to attempt the impossible is not worth trying because it is not sensible, it is not reasonable. But as Mother repeats, we have to recognize that it is to attempt the impossible that we are here, to move out of our common everyday rut, to progress towards something not yet attempted. He said, this is what gives meaning to life. If we believe in this possibility of constant growth and change, she says, as she told the children long ago, for you, the word impossible will not have any sense. It will not make sense. Today, the word impossible, we don't say it doesn't make sense. It makes sense to the average man. So we can't continue forever to be average. We have to be different. So a dark, ambiguous presence questioned all. Is life? What is this energy? What does life lead us to? Death, loss of life, birth, growth, decay, death. This is the curve. We lose and start again. Is it worth it? The sages have said, don't even try. Don't be born at all. Be part of the eternal, the infinite. This is the Buddha, this is Shankara. This is the whole field of wisdom You just identify yourself with the eternal, the infinite, and you don't need to get into a body. So then why has the earth been made? The earth is a body. It has forms. Not to allow our attachment to the world of life. Just be part of that complete vastness of the infinite consciousness, the Brahman. So this is not the reason why the Divine created this force also, the force of life. The secret will that robes itself with night. This is as if night, which is contrary to light, or is it contrary to light? Or is it simply a robe? Night is a screen, just like it may be a prison. Unless we are in prison, we don't yearn for freedom. We don't yearn for really liberty. So it is a will that rises to fall, seeming to fall, so that out of the fall we attempt to rise. That which Sri Aurobindo describes as the vertical spiral of evolution. It's not a horizontal change, it's a vertical change. You rise to fall. You fall so far that there is no other way up, way except going up. You fall to the absolute bottom. There's only one way to go, and that is up. So the secret will that robes itself with night and offers to spirit the ordeal of the flesh, body. We have to go through suffering. Matter is the field of suffering because we are attached to the surface consciousness. We don't realize that in this world of flesh also is the divine power. And offers to spirit the ordeal of the flesh, imposed a mystic mask of death and pain. It's a mask. First he says a robe, then he says a mask. But neither the robe nor the mask are the person. I wear a mask. The face is behind the mask. Which he says beautifully later when he's describing Savitri sees death, the presence of death. She sees the reality behind this. And she says, death, the dim mask, had grown a wonderful face. The face is the truth, not the mask. Mahendrabhai, it's 5:30. You can go. Interned now in the slow and suffering years, sojourns the winged and wonderful wayfarer, the angel. Angel is a force that has come down from above and has wings. Distance doesn't really matter. This force has involved itself into the darkness. And then it is because of this that the darkness starts to churn, to be disturbed, and the need to grow out of darkness is felt. Interned now in the slow and suffering years, sojourns the winged and wonderful wayfarer, and can no more recall her happier state. So life to us, to the... What is this world of life? Life is inevitably accompanied by death, by failure, by loss. What we have to lose. The energy you have to lose. Then don't be born at all. Then don't take up the experiment. Be pure spirit, don't wear a body. This was the kind of solution that some of the Vedantic philosophers had. It is in the world of body that the shadow of ignorance is felt. Be only connected with the soul, the spirit.
What is the exact meaning of sajan?
Sajan. Sajan is to stay, to live. For a while. For a little while. It's not permanent. Because the temporary is there. So it is as if this force has come temporarily into our life. It doesn't last. But when you enter into a new state, it is common that you have forgotten the past. At every stage, we have forgotten. Like today, you are middle-aged, or old, or adult. The purity, the innocence, the natural spontaneity of the little child is lost. The child doesn't even know that he is happy. He is happy without knowing it. You ask him today, when were you most happy? Yes, in kindergarten, as a child, but not then. At that age, he didn't even know whether he was happy. There is no mental formulation. There is a spontaneous thing. Today, because I am not in that state, I realize what a fortunate life that was. How happy we were, we growing up here in the ashram. How simple was everything. We did not have to make any decisions. Today, we have to make decisions at every stage. We are torn and pulled by all kinds of reasons. This is better, that is not so good. This is right for you, that is not. How do I know what is right for me? I don't know who I really am, what I am for. And all those questions does not torment a three-year-old. He just is automatically happy, singing. Sometimes he falls down, he grazes his knee, he weeps a little. But that is wonderful because he gets more love. He gets pampered, he gets spoiled. So that it's a continuous delight of existence. Not felt at that time as delight. Recognized now as delight. When we have lost the treasure, you realize what a treasure it was. When we have the treasure, we don't give it value. That is a pity. Perhaps that is the beginning of tragedy. What Sri Aurobindo describes tragedy to be is the failure of the soul. We fail to remain connected with our soul. That is why we plunge into darkness. And must obey the inert inconscience law. Insensible foundation of a world in which blind limits are on beauty laid and sorrow and joy as struggling comrades live. Where there is joy, there is loss. Limits. Sometimes it gets even more twisted. Sorrow becomes joy. You enjoy pain. That is the whole process of perversity. And mother has, this is the word she uses. Falsehood is a perversity. Fear is a perversity. Death is a perversity. When we can find the straight, purified energy, each thing, falsehood is a perversity of truth. So that is the whole problem. To get out of that twist that has taken place, the ambiguous presence. A dim and dreadful muteness fell on her. Inertia, dullness, we plunge into darkness. Abolished was her subtle, mighty spirit, and slain her boon of child-god happiness. That was gone. So this is the change. Life becomes the field of ignorance, of dullness, of failure, of death. And all her glory into littleness turned. That is why the great wise people said, don't get into the world of life. It is filled with desire. Desire is attachment. Attachment is pain. Just stay out of these things. That is the meaning of the word nirvana. Abolition. Abolition of everything. It's a vastness. And all her sweetness into a maimed desire. Because desire is the cause of pain, of attachment, and we are imprisoned by that attachment. To feed death with her works is here life's doom. We live to die. All things as if come, take so much time and trouble to manifest something new. Not only physical death, bodies not only die, ideals die. You start something new with a great ideal. After some time it becomes humdrum, ordinary, commonplace. All things. To maintain everything at the height of its original starting point is extremely difficult unless we are always conscious of that which started the whole process. If I can always be in touch with the force that projected life, that is the Divine Mother's force, because she is the energy, only then can I be free of fear, of doom, of pain. Because whatever she gives me is a blessing that she has given me in order to let me go forward. Otherwise, it is always a doom. So veiled was her immortality that she seemed inflicting consciousness on unconscious things, so that at each step where there is a little more consciousness, it becomes an infliction. It becomes a torment. It becomes a punishment. The more conscious you are, the more sensitive you are. So when you say sensitive, you say, I respond to pain more easily than to anything else. An episode in an eternal death. So life becomes a short episode in a world of darkness, in a world where there is, ultimately you say, there is this world is an illusion, it is pointless, it makes no sense. That is the solution. You get out of this world. It is an eternal death. A mess of being that must forever cease. Such was the evil mystery of her change. Okay?
So basically the entrance, when the coming of ambiguous presence brings in the whole.
The ambiguous presence is the perversity. But he does it. She does it purposely so that we lose contact. We lose contact with the origin. Because we lose contact with the origin, we are completely trapped in our ignorance, in our smallness, in our ego. And that is the evil mystery of her change. We have to lose contact in order later to yearn for it, to want to realize that was the answer. Why did I lose contact? You can't want something very hard unless you have lost it first. If you have it already, you don't want it. It's there. You have lost it, then only you want it. And that is the secret. We don't have to lose. If we are conscious, you don't have to lose in order to want. To be in touch with the origin through self-giving, through simplicity. She was always so emphatic about simplicity. To be just simple, like herbs and trees. They don't ask for anything, they just are. And they are delightful.
How can we define simplicity?
Simplicity is without all the complications of the mind. that argues this, supposing this was not, this was that. It's not that the tree says, why am I not a bird? It doesn't say, I'm not a bird, so I'm not a bird. But I am a man, I said, why am I not a god? Why does that person have so many capacities, I don't? Why can this, somebody else has this, I don't have it? All the sense of comparison, the sense of self-evaluation, I want to give a greater prominence to myself. I want to be somebody, and I am not. I compare myself with somebody else. This sense of ego is not there in the early forms of life. A plant is a plant. It doesn't say, why am I not a bird? I was not meant to fly. I'm a plant. Birds are meant to fly. It's good. Birds come and nest in my branches. So I'm kind to birds also. There is a kind of harmony in the world of simplicity. It's harmonious. It's natural. This harmony has gone because of pride, because of ego, because of demands. Okay?
But then it should be recovered after the mind. Because we have to go through the mind, no? Because we are
you right. Have to.
So we have to find again simplicity.
Exactly, exactly. That is the whole secret. You have to lose, then you have to get again. So it is a curve that he says, you go up, you go down, and because you go down and lower down than before, every stage you go lower than before, then you rise up again. And this is the whole pattern. It's not a straight climb.
I was listening to this passage with Shravan, and at the point somebody asked, why this dark force in life, this night? And he made it clear that he could have called it the Lord of Evolution. For him it was the Lord of Evolution. That is what you say. You say, we go down and because we don't want to stay at this level, we have to go further. We have not to stop.
But evolution has to be preceded by involution. So the descent has to take place, only then can we climb.
But we are at that point.
If we are conscious, otherwise we are just pushed. So now she has brought that power so strongly in the atmosphere that she says that you can do this change in not a one life, but in a few days. The consciousness of the divine supramental power that has come down. She says, this is what she told us in 1973. You can do it in a few days. What otherwise earlier would have taken millennia. And it can still take millennia for those who don't consciously participate. But those who consciously participate in the effort, they can change faster. It is up to us. That's why so many New Year messages where she says, will you help? Will you collaborate? If we collaborate. If not, it will go on. It won't stop. But what can be done in a kind of a happy, harmonious forward march will be slowly and unfolding. It will be dragged out a little at a time. So that's how it is.